Welcome back to Closing 20s. As always, you're here with Maria Carmen.
And I'm Bea.
And we are delighted to dive into yet another topic and yet another learning area of our life this morning. It's morning for us. Today we want to share a little bit about the learnings we've had over the last decade around our relationship with ourselves, which is, I think, a little bit broad, perhaps. And maybe we can define a little bit what we mean with that. But first of all, I guess, as always by now, our check-in. How are we feeling? What are we thinking? How are you, Bia?
I'm feeling good. I lost track of where I am in my menstrual cycle. I think I'm probably in
Midway.
my spring. Yeah,
Yeah.
probably midway. I feel good. I landed in Ireland again after 3 weeks of being home. It always feels strange to readjust to a new routine and a different place. I'm still landing here, but it feels really good to go back to doing the podcast in this room where I'm now because this is where we started. But I'm happy to go back to my routine. That's how I'm feeling.
That makes sense. That feels
Yeah.
probably good.
Is that a thing that I don't know? Because when you're in your spring of your menstrual cycle, you're like picking up energy again, so you want to do more things. And I guess like routine to me means I get to organize my day so that I can do more things. And so,
You have that
yeah.
momentum. So it's, I
Yeah.
think, compared to the tail end of the menstrual cycle, so just before you get your menstruation, where you're more in a cozying up mode or tidying, but
Yeah.
just like to clear up space so that you can rest. I think the kind of like energy of the inner spring, which is basically between menstruation and ovulation, around day, let's say 7 to 14 or something like that. Normally, it's more about like that momentum to do things, see people, organize.
Yeah, organize exactly a plan. But then it's funny because sometimes after ovulation, your routine just goes out the window because
Yeah,
you're a
of
bit like
course.
scattered.
Yeah,
So.
exactly. Yeah, interestingly enough, I think I'm a few days before you, but I'm also at the beginning of my spring, so I'm done with my period. And I actually, this is the phase of my cycle that I struggled the most with, because I find that this surge of energy sometimes brings up a little bit of anxiety for me. I feel a little bit ungrounded. I am quite comfortable actually in my period energy, for example, or my premenstrual energy, because I just have this like time with myself, and I am able to tune out a little bit from outside noise. And when I'm in my inner spring, like I'm just stimulated by everything, and I have a lot of ideas, but also I have this, rising anxiety. So I have to say that I feel well physically. I feel very good. The sun is out, which is, again, as I was saying before to you, a miracle. We are seeing the sun, and I feel really happy. But also, I have this underlying like wave of okay, but then I'd have to do the next thing, and then I have to do the next thing, and I haven't done that, and I haven't done that, which is interesting because normally I wouldn't have that in other phases of my cycle.
Yeah. I find it fascinating that we're recording an episode about the relationship with ourselves, and this has been such an amazing tool for me to get to know myself, and it wasn't introduced to me. It's so interesting because now it's just part of my life. I remember doing like a few years ago, you had this online course where it was something like Find Your Flow. And I remember doing that. And it was quite a long time ago. I think it was during COVID.
It was 2020 or
Yeah.
the beginning of January 2021, something like that.
And then doing that course was, I had already listened to you talk about menstrual cycles and menstrual cycle awareness, but I think doing that course was really like the beginning of like my own experience with it and really getting to know myself in the different phases. Yeah.
Well, it
So
fits
thank
well
you.
here, right? You're more than welcome. And I just have to say, this is, of course, my first learning from my twin, that your menstrual cycle can be your compass and your inner guidance. And once you understand that, once you get familiar with the cycle, I think your relationship with yourself can get so much stronger and so much more profound. It almost seems obvious to bring this learning, like, to me, again, as you were saying, this is such a big part of my life that I almost don't feel it as a learning anymore. But I was reflecting back to it that I actually got into this when I turned 20. So it's been exactly almost a decade of kind of this very intimate relationship with understanding how I feel on different days of my cycle, understanding the patterns of many different things, including how I feel when I work out, how much I sleep and what kind of sleep I need, what do I dream like during the night, even whether I have like very vivid dreams, like kind of changes during the cycle. Now I cannot imagine actually my life without it, but I have to say a few weeks ago I was thinking like, wow, there is going to be a time actually in my life where I will not have a menstrual cycle anymore. And of course, it's far, but it's not just menopause. It's also if you ever get pregnant for quite a while, you don't have that inner rhythm. And then I was thinking, I think I will really miss it because it's almost like this internal calendar slash clock. Like it gives me this inner rhythm, which helps me to also really decode, take responsibility for what I say and what I do, but also really compassion, like the thing of it's okay. You know that this is a hard time of the cycle for you, and it's okay. You can treat yourself with some
Yeah,
kindness.
self-compassion. Do you remember how you first got into it?
Yeah, I was actually on exchange here in Rotterdam, and somehow I was targeted online by a video about the different phases of the menstrual cycle. I still remember the creator, even. I think her name is Victoria. I don't remember her surname, but Zimmerman, maybe. And I had already gone into this sort of angle of like menstruation as this potential discriminatory kind of area for women, but I had not linked it to my personal practice. And then I watched this video, I still remember, with the, like, they were very short videos about the four different phases. And I was like, whoa. Like, I remember my mind being like, I cannot believe this. And since then, I then started basically, I started very basic note taking on my diary. So when I would write a diary entry, I would just say, what is the day of my cycle? And to calculate that, you just have to go back to your first day of bleeding. That's day one. And then you basically count forward. And then, of course, I started reading all these books and understanding that indeed there is this inner map. And yeah, and now it's just like such a part of it. I don't even know how to describe it. It comes so naturally. And I've also, of course, shared it with friends, and that's been really super fun also too, because now exactly when we talk, like it's quite normal to address that without even saying, I don't even have to ask you.
But what I was thinking about is that you said you had a diary, for instance, already. And so I just feel like you always had an interest in getting to know yourself. And I think you're very much someone that I would say you know yourself very well. And when you take steps to get to know yourself even better. And I just think it's just part of who you are. So I'm
Yeah.
not surprised that you saw that and like something like ignited in you and you were like, okay,
Definitely.
this is something I could spend hours on.
That's totally true. And also, it's a combination that I had not been on hormonal birth control. And so I also had a, I don't like to use that natural cycle denomination anymore, but let's say I was ovulating naturally. So also, I knew that I could already start tracking. And I think a lot of people, especially in the early 20s, they're on birth control. And at least for our generation, it was very common to be on the pill by then. So remember, like also seeing around me is that a lot of girls or a lot of friends, maybe they would like peer this information, but they were not really able to immediately link it to their own experience because they were not really maybe experiencing such changes throughout the cycle. But you're completely right. Also, I've always been, I think my first diary is dated 2001. So I was like 6 years old. So, and I was reflecting about what I wanted to do in life, and I wanted to be a pianist
That's so
or a novel
crazy.
or a novelist. So it's, I have to say, I'm a little bit, I have a bit of a tendency for self-reflection. But
You
how have you
do.
experienced that? Because I also really always like to see how other people's practices with menstrual cycle awareness come to be, because I think you have a different practice than I do, of course, but you still do have a practice.
I do, but I guess I was also just thinking about how for me, I think I've always been self-aware in a sense that I had lots of thoughts and feelings, and I was very aware that I had lots of thoughts and feelings, and at times felt overwhelming. But it took me a while to find practices where I was like structurally like part of my life, finding time to deal with those thoughts and feelings. And it took me maybe getting to some sadder like times in life. If you go through something like what that is quite sad, or it's yeah, it can it, like that sort of is the impetus for then more like self-awareness and having those practices in place. But and they become very necessary in those times. But then like I think the good thing of how I've done it in the last decade is that I've kept going with those practices. It's not just when I need them that they're there. It's more like it just became part of, just part of my life. But for the menstrual cycle awareness, I think it's something that I'm vaguely, to be honest, like most of the times I'm vaguely aware that this is the phase I'm in. And it's not an active let me track like when I'm ovulating. It's something that I will, as you said, it's like the self-compassion comes forward when, for instance, if I'm during my period, most people feel a bit off, a bit more introverted. Maybe the inner critic is a bit more loud in your head. So for me, it helps me to then link that to the menstrual cycle and understand that hormonally, that's the phase where those things happen naturally. And that's my experience of that phase of the cycle. It might not be everyone's experience. So I think I just noticed some patterns over the years and like paid attention to them. And by now, it's like a given. I just know that they're there, and I can access that information, and it helps me, and it helps me to bring self-compassion into my life. But I wouldn't say I'm not journaling about it as much. I want to talk about journaling because journaling is such a big part of
Yes, bring
all
it
of
in.
this. Because you were saying you had diaries, and I obviously had diaries, but I was not very consistent with them. And I think when I was a teenager, I had like different outputs, so I was writing a lot, but I was writing more like fiction. And then I didn't write. University was just a big blank in my like in terms of I was just very overwhelmed with studying, and I think I just turned into this like robot of like thoughts and feelings are not helpful, so let's just put those out of the door. Which is funny because it's probably the time where I was feeling the most and thinking the most, but it felt very overwhelming. But anyway, just to say that I picked up journaling very seriously during, I think, before COVID, because I read The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, which is like a 12-week program, and a big part of that is morning pages. And it's the practice of waking up and writing 3 pages of uninterrupted flow, stream of consciousness. And so that was life-changing. It's not an exaggeration to say that. It was life-changing because it was the way I could just see on the page, like reflected back to me, those thoughts and the thoughts that come up again and again in the same pattern of thoughts. And you're really having to face yourself, and because it's just written down, and when it's written down, it's different
It's
than
out
it
there.
being flowing in your head and it's little birds that kind of come and go. It's no, it's written down, and you keep writing down the same thing, and you just eventually you almost get bored with yourself. Yeah, so journaling has been like that's my first learning. Just journaling is the way to the soul. It's I for me, like it's been the most transformative like practice.
I find journaling so interesting because indeed, as I was
No.
saying before to you, like I also, of course, I was journaling a lot when I was younger, also inconsistently. But as I grew older, so in my 20s, I also got much more intimate with journaling. But what helped me most is to have structure around what I journal around. Actually, if I have to talk about my day or like just write what I think, it just somehow doesn't do it for me. But when I started experimenting with, for example, writing down the three best things that happened in a day, which is a practice I've had for 8 years now,
And you still do it.
I still do it.
Oh my God. You're so consistent.
I
I
know.
feel like what I'm bringing to this conversation is like a lot, like I a lack of inconsistency, but it's okay. If for those that are not consistent, I just want to say it's okay.
It's good. No, but that's what I'm saying. But this is what works for me because indeed that
But I
like
admire
more.
it so much.
I don't know. It's just sometimes I wish I could do a little bit more of this indeed stream of consciousness journal. I guess I could try, but what feels
Yeah.
the most useful for me is to have this routine around journaling or like to have the prompts, for example. So with having done quite a lot of coaching in the last years, I've also worked with a lot of prompts. So with like kind of external input in terms of questions, and then I really like to write out. But it's so interesting. I just find it fascinating. And I know our brains work in a way very similarly, in a way very differently.
Yeah.
So it's also nice to find that. Do you reread your journals as well or not?
I yeah, I've done that, but not often. But I sometimes would go back and I remember doing that once of highlighting it with a highlighter pen of like things I thought were interesting. Also things that I thought were well written. I was like, oh, that's good. But for me, it's just because I'm obviously very into this creative practice of writing. So I think I was just curious what, I think it was at a time where I was also like curious about, because the good thing about the morning pages is that it's because it's a stream of consciousness. One of it, and it, I did it in the context of the artist's way. So it's very much the whole thing is about recovering your creativity. And so what happens when you read, when you write like that, in is that you shut off your inner critic completely because you're just writing and you're not questioning what you're writing. And so I actually then, I think that has been like a very helpful practice in my writing creatively. But I don't know what I was gonna say. Well, wait, you were asking me about.
No, if you reread your journals and then
Oh,
if,
yeah.
yeah, that's, I think it's just interesting because for you,
Yeah.
in a way, just, oh, I'm not making this connection. Wait. Like the first learning I brought in was around the menstrual cycle, which was, co of course, is
Yeah.
also like a big core of my work. And so I also, that's also my sort of like personal practice around the thing that I also have organized kind of like my work around. And
Yeah.
journaling and writing is also something that is, of course, like becoming and transitioning to be a big part of who you want to be
Yeah.
as a, yeah, who you want to be, full stop. I don't want to say it as a professional, but it's yeah, it's interesting
Yeah.
that in the end those things, like, we almost need to have this personal relationship also with the things we do, right? There is, this is the personal practice, this is you in your own practice with yourself, and that's why this is about the relationship with yourself. And I used to have a coach that
Yeah.
used to say, like, the first and most long-lasting relationship you will ever have is the one with yourself.
Yeah.
And when she used to say that, the first time I heard that, I was like, yes, that's true. And why do we not invest in our relationship with ourselves? Like, why? Because we even started, right? Like, we talked before talking about this, we talked about our relationship with home, we talked about our relationship with our friends, we talked about our relationship with career and purpose, and only now we are at our relationship with
Yeah,
ourselves. It's interesting to reflect on
it
that.
is interesting. It's surprisingly late in the conversation. And it's a topic that I even felt a bit, oh, I don't know what I have to say about it, kind of thing. So that tells you a lot.
But I think
Turns
so.
out a lot. Yeah, it turns out a
Of
lot.
course.
Yeah. No, so I think for me, like I maybe I'll link my second learning here, which is what you're saying of you the practice of self-care. And, well, I guess I don't know if you can call it self-care, but definitely like self-awareness is so personal. It's you have to find your own. And for me, as someone who is now embarking on more of a creative journey and taking myself more seriously as a creative person, I think it's such a difficult journey to be in process because you get to know yourself and you're really confronted with yourself in the creative work that you do. So for me, I guess what I'll say is that it's linking to that creativity episode where we talked about how creativity can be a spiritual practice and like a way of knowing yourself. And for me, that has been like the way I, at least in the few last few years, the practices and the routine around it is the way that I've gotten to know myself better. And like for you, it's obviously maybe like more related to the menstrual cycle awareness work and all of that. But for me, it has been about sitting down and writing. And so, for instance, like very concretely with writing, creatively, is that the inner critic voice is so loud. And anyone that is trying to create anything, I think the inner critic voice is there, but especially with creative practices, like one of the first things they tell you is just put it outside a door and close that door. And then there's different ways of doing it. Like Elizabeth Gilbert talks about how she has a dialogue with fear and she personifies it. And I don't know if I'm imagining this, but I'm pretty sure she talks to her inner critic as if they're like garden like G German garden gnome. No, it's like something like this. It was very, I don't know. I don't know if I'm
Yes,
imagining
very
this,
funny.
but the
No, I
idea that they're
remember
German
that.
is also hilarious.
Yes, that's very funny. I think I remember also saying that the fear can be in the car, but it cannot be in the driving seat. It just needs to be
That's
like in the
exactly what she
back.
says.
And I love that.
Yeah.
I remember I only read that once and it stuck with me a lot. And I was like, yeah, you're
Oh my
coming
God, yeah.
along, but you're not driving.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's, that's really, yeah, that's really interesting. And you're right. I think it's also the, to really build that relationship with ourselves, we have to be willing to confront our worst parts, to be honest. Like, it's just, and that's also what the morning pages bring up. That's what writing brings up. That's what, like, getting familiar with your inner voice and in your inner critic as well brings up, is that idea that you cannot escape yourself if you want to know yourself, right? Like, and that's where the self-compassion comes in. And I also would like to just link this here, because I think for people that are listening, it's clear that we are have an interest in personal development and self-awareness, right? That this is something that for us is important. It's not a universal thing. Some other people don't have a particular interest. For us, this is something, actually, I think something that also we bonded over and something that we've talked about a lot. And for me, my 20s, I've always had this thing of like goal setting and vision setting. And this is something that is part of me since even before my 20s. But my 20s, and particularly the second half of my 20s, I think since I turned 25 or so, and I got into coaching a lot as well, the big learning there is that you cannot criticize your way to your dream life. Like, it's really like, without that self-compassion, and we're bringing that in, you cannot actually achieve any goal. You cannot envision a dream life, because and that's so counterintuitive to me compared to the kind of messaging we received maybe in our teenage years of you have to work really hard, you have to be consistent with your goals, you have to, nothing tastes as good as a trained body, whatever. But all those kind of like toxic messaging around like your goals. And what I've realized in the last years is that without self-compassion, without the love of who you are already and what you already have, and that without that awareness and gratitude, you're never gonna be motivated to do anything. And to me, that was really counterintuitive. And also realizing that it works this way, that when you do accept your flaws, but you also accept your current condition, that's when you actually get to change. And if you refuse to accept that you're not where you want to be yet, or you have a struggle with who you are or what you do, that's going to make it really difficult to make any moves forward. And that's something that I really have to thank coaching, and particularly the kind of coaches I've worked with, who are very, I've worked with Maisie Hill, who is very menstrual cycle aware, but also all the feminist coaching I've had over the years, of recognizing that, again, we bring that part in and as well of, women have been taught for decades and centuries that they need to work very hard for their worth to be recognized, and then their worth can come up and down depending on how they look and whether they have a relationship or whether they're contributing to the world with a child. And so those dynamics are important to recognize those structures, so that we can start with a huge amount of self-compassion and be like, you're good, girl, you're already good.
Oh, I know. I was thinking about the movie Barbie and how, and it's an incredible movie. And in the sense that, like, when I was watching it for the first time, I did have this realization of that we are not good enough is just something that is part of the women experience. Because there is something about looking around and not seeing women represented in positions of power, and not just not represented in all the different shapes and forms of life. If not, you don't have to be a mom, you can also be the president. And not having women represented just does, like, it subconsciously inform your thinking around, and I think that the your thinking around what you can do. And I think the main message that puts forward is we're not good enough, because we're not enough. We're not enough to be this X, Y, and Z. We're not. So we're never enough. So I think there's, yeah, I think that's, when I was talking about like the creative practice and how much the inner critic voice shows up then, it shows up then, but it also shows up in all aspects of life. I've had to deal with a very loud inner critic like for most of my life. It's so good now that we have the language for it, and I can like recognize it as that, because before I didn't. I just thought that the voice in my head was me. And that's just, it's so horrible to go for life thinking that the voices in your head are you, because they're not. And I guess
No.
that's also a big learning of, you're not the voices in your head, and you can also choose not to listen to them. And yeah, I agree. I think the inner critic, like, there's so that for me, that has been the biggest learning of the last decade, perhaps, is how to identify when that's showing up for you and how to deal with it. And yeah, and I can bring in that gender component to the conversation. It is very much part of the women experience. I'm sure men feel it in different ways. Yeah, but you do wonder if Trump has an inner critic, like in the same way that like women do. It's just something that I've had to deal with, and it's really hard. It's not easy. It's
No,
really hard to deal with
but I
it.
think there's also an element of the inner critic sometimes has something interesting to say. And in the sense of sometimes it's trying to protect us, sometimes it's showing our fear. I think it's showing us our vulnerability. And if we are willing to engage with it without letting it drive, so again to the metaphor of Liz Gilbert, I think we
Yeah.
can also learn to take something from it and leave the rest. Because it's not all, I think sometimes it just shows us where we're afraid, and it shows us where we are vulnerable, and it shows us where we need support, maybe, right? Like it's like a sort of like a red light showing us. And of course, most of the times it's just things that our brain is like telling us because we don't want to risk failure. We don't want to risk what we're gonna think about ourselves if we fail, if other people will have thoughts or say words, right? That's the basic premise of keeping
Yeah.
yourself safe. And maybe that's I guess my last learning fits well here, because the last decade has been this kind of, as similarly to what you were saying, this kind of unraveling of realizing the differences between my thoughts, my feelings, the circumstances outside of me, and then the actions I take. And again, this for me particularly comes from coaching, but it's also very connected to cognitive behavioral therapy, because it's the idea that your thoughts are not your reality, that you build your reality through your thoughts, and then your thoughts will bring up feelings, and then your feelings will be the motor for action, and that's how you have a result, right? But this idea that the circumstances around you can be neutral, and then what you think about them and how you feel about them then shapes your world, for me has been such a really, this has been a transformative realization and practice, because it's really the practice of realizing that people can say words to you, and what they're doing is not that they're hurting you, but they are saying words. And then your what you think about them and how that makes you feel, that creates your experience, right? But the experience of being hurt doesn't just exist. And perhaps this is just like a very abstract kind of concept, but for me, realizing that actually we have so much power in us, in shaping how we experience the world, in what we let other people do to us in terms of like reactions that they elicit in us, and that with the tool of self-compassion, with the tools that we just talked about so far, we can also take ownership of what happens to us. And also, I don't want to say rewrite the story, because this is not just about being the hero of your story, but it's about recognizing that also, for example, you can regulate your nervous system. You can bring yourself back to calm again when you're feeling nervous. You can recognize that you're in a thought spiral and take a step back, even though that's, of course, something that can feel very overwhelming. And that's for me, as someone that has spent her teenage years like dealing with anxiety and with a lot of like really overwhelming feelings, I think, about just the world without nothing ever really happened to me. So I had a very easy life, I think. That's what changed for me, like to the realization that we do have power and ownership over how we think and how we feel. And that has completely transformed my experience of life, of course, because it meant that I could just, first of all, observe. And then second of all, when I have the capacity, either lean on others or on myself to actually process the emotion and then get on the other side of it.
Yeah, no, I think that's beautiful. That's exactly, it is the idea that you are, because I think when you're younger, you just feel like things are coming at you, and obviously you just don't have the tools because you're learning how to go through those emotions. I think there's a learning element to like going through your first heartbreak, for instance, which I think is a very common experience, and coming out of the other side, knowing that you can get through that, and like how do you get through it? And I think in a way that it just doesn't, if you haven't had that learning experience in your early 20s of going through difficult times and taking ownership of how you have of how you yeah of how then move on, it's I think you learn by doing a lot in a lot of these, right? I think it's easy to say that, oh, you get into like certain practices and then everything is fine. It's, no, I think you learn by doing. I think you learn through the hard times. I think, yeah, I don't think we have all the answers. Obviously, we don't have all the answers when we were
Totally.
younger, and not, yeah, and not really
And also
now,
not now.
and not now. But yeah, I guess that's just my thought of like, it's a really long process of there's still blind spots, right, of how you deal with things, and you can't control all of it.
No, you can't. And actually, the only thing you can control is accepting that you cannot, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
And
Exactly.
flowing with it. How do you feel
Yeah.
about your relationship with yourself right now, today?
I think today as in like today, meta, like just like abstractly, I think I know myself better. And I think I've learned how to look at myself. I liked what you said about the inner critic sometimes being helpful, because there is an element of not wanting to see certain things about yourself. Because it can be so confronting. So I think in this process of the last decade, I feel like I've had to be confronted with certain parts of myself, and instead of shutting it off and putting it under the rug, which is a tendency. And I think the relationship with ourselves, like we've talked about self-awareness basically, right? And so self-awareness means having to look at all of this, all of you. And so that has been the biggest process, because I think I certainly have a tendency of sometimes not wanting to look at certain things, because it's easier to go through life. It's easier to be productive in life, which is that, yeah, that's so hard. Like the productivity of sometimes I look at very functional, like what I think in my head are very functional people. And of course, that's a projection. Like everyone deals with their own things. But there is, I think every day you wake up and you're like, I don't know, I can choose to deal with the hard things, or sometimes it's easier to shut them off and go on with my day.
To-do list,
How
yeah.
do you do that? Because I sometimes feel like it's actually very productive to look to work on yourself, but sometimes it doesn't feel productive.
Yeah, I hear you on this. I think I have the opposite problem, actually, than you problem, where I have the opposite attitude,
Yeah.
which is I spend so much time on this relationship because I love, but that's because I love the cognitive process of getting to know
Yeah.
my thoughts and getting, and that can also become a buffering for actually not wanting to be productive, let me tell you that. So it's like a fine balance between how do you also keep living life, right? It's
Yeah.
wonderful to build this relationship with yourself and indeed make time. It's like a relationship with a friend. We've talked about this before. Make time to stay with your emotions, to observe, to write, and to do all these practices that we've talked about that fits well, that fit well with your preferences. But also at the end of the day, you also just have to live life. Life is not just about the reflection about life, right?
Yeah, that's maybe where I was getting at. You can't get much into that,
Yes.
and it's good to it's helpful as long as I think there's yeah it's helpful to have self-awareness, but it is also good to maybe so that's where also self-compassion comes in, is you have to just go through life understanding that you're not perfect, and that's a really hard realization.
That's I feel like every single episode we go back to this, which is we cannot be perfect, and that's the whole thing. Like that when
Yeah.
you accept that everything is just indeed, it's a
Yeah,
practice, it's not a
that's so
stone
millennial
story.
of us, by the way. I'm like
It
scared of how millennial that is.
is. I feel like I'm embracing that.
Oh, because yeah, that's I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I think the narrative has changed, so I hope people struggle less with perfectionism. Yeah, because I think that has been a big struggle. And again, linking it to the inner critic, like that's for me, that has been the biggest like fight of my 20s, is and this voice in your head that tells you that you're not good enough. And I think as long I think for me, like addressing those in whatever way has been like the kind of like where I want to focus.
Yeah, makes sense. And I'm so excited about it. I feel like we've had a wonderful conversation. I was not expecting this, but not because I didn't expect to have a good conversation, but because indeed the
Yeah.
topic can be a bit fluffy or, but I got so many ideas also from you. Thanks also for sharing. That's so
Oh my
interesting.
gosh, thank you. I always learn so much in these conversations. I always learn so much from you. I was actually reflecting on like the money episode because I was editing it, and I actually feel like I at the end I think I got a coaching session from you on that one. I was like, this was great. Because I think I came in just being like, oh, my relationship with money is really hard. And then what do you, I feel like just like what you said, and like the thing that really stuck with me was the whole thing of it's so much about your nervous system, and managing your anxiety around money is yeah is basically actually regulating your nervous system on a daily basis. Like for me, that's the thing that like that's yeah it's because it's something you have to deal with every day. It's a good talking about incorporating daily practices about self-awareness. It's like I have to deal with money every day, so every day I get to choose how I feel about it.
Exactly. You get
And
to
so
do it
it's like
extra.
these, it's like these things. It's like they call it like it's like stacking habits. Every time you do something, and like you get to do something else, it just makes it easier to like to keep the same habit. But I feel like the same thing with self-awareness is every day there are certain decisions that you make, and every day you can like you can just have those like micro moments in your day where you are implementing self-awareness, and it doesn't feel very burdensome or like very like heavy. It's just those are it's like small things. It helps. I think maybe that's a thought for myself. That's how I'm consistent because I'm actually not consistent with all the like the journaling and the reflection at the end of the year. I'm not consistent with that. I've never been. I hardly keep track of what I read and like what I listen. So I just, yeah. So maybe for someone who's listening, who's a bit more like on the floating side of things as I am, it's like it's just having those micro moments in the day, like they do help.
Indeed. Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it's nice that we have brought also a bit of a different approach for each of us, and I loved it. So thank you
Okay,
for
thank you.
sharing all of this, and I'm excited to hear about people's learnings around this, and I'm sure we'll have conversations also on the basis of what we're discussing here with people in our lives. So for the people in our lives, expect having a conversation with us about this. All right. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Bye.